Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Attorney General Martha Coakley is in U.S. District Court right now arguing against the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. DOMA defines marriage as the union between one man and one woman, which of course is not how marriage is defined here in Massachusetts, where same-sex unions are legal. We'll be talking more about the Massachusetts argument against DOMA a little later this hour and whether states' rights should or should not trump federal law when it comes to gay marriage. But first today, I'm joined by Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea, who's got some First in the City reporting for us on another story. Hey there, Adam.
Hi, Meghna. So WBUR listeners probably hear quite a lot about the globalization and industrialization of food and its attendant consequences. In fact, based on some of the emails that we get, I'd say that some of you can't get enough of those stories.
And indeed, actually, this week, Adam, you found out that this global issue has actually come to Boston in a very immediate way.
Right. So the Boston Public Schools, which are facing a $50 million budget gap going into the next fiscal year, and one of the ways that Court Street is hoping to save some money now is by privatizing management of its food services. So companies are bidding for that job right now, but there are a number of critics who say that the contract is a lock for a multinational corporation that will inevitably edge out local food providers and stymie efforts to make school meals more healthy.
So parents, students, if this might affect you, if you're concerned about the food in schools and where it comes from, we would really love to take a couple of calls from you. So call us right away at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Right now, here's Adam Scoop on Boston School Lunches.
This is the homemade soup. Going today back there. That's a homemade vegetable soup, freshly made, all fresh ingredients, fresh vegetables we just chopped up, just waiting for it to come to a simmer.
At the Umana Barnes Middle School in East Boston, the kids are always asking Chef Kirk Conrad for hot soup, even on hot days like this one.
And this is the vegetable for the day, so this is quick frozen broccoli, and we're going to steam it lightly in the steamer, and the kids really like it too. It's one of their favorites.
Chef Conrad supervises a team of six smiling ladies preparing about 500 lunches for the day.
And this is the kitchen staff. This is Uvi.
Hello. They have to settle for some processed or prepackaged product here and there, but mostly...
All right, what is grated the cheese?
Oh, that's a real block of cheese right there.
Oh, yes.
And you're grating it yourself.
Yes.
To be clear, this is not a common scene in the Boston public schools. The majority of schools don't even have kitchens. Widely loathed frozen meals are trucked in from a company in Philadelphia and revived in warming ovens. And even those schools that do have kitchens are serving a lot of processed, high-fat, high-sugar, high-sodium food. Over the last few years, people have recognized this as a problem and have been trying to fix it. People like the East Boston-based nonprofit Project Bread and the Boston Public Health Commission, even Mayor Menino, they've all stepped in to set up pilot programs for healthier cooking and eating, like this one in Eastie. But at the same time, another problem has been simmering.
Our food service division, since I've been here, 3 years been running, well, it's been 4 years running in deficit.
Michael Gore is the chief operating officer of the Boston Public Schools.
If the food service is sustaining deficit of $3.5 million, that means that $3.5 million had taken out of schools.
Three-quarters of BPS kids are poor enough to qualify for federally reimbursed school meals. That means the feds pay the schools directly for each of those meals served. Now, with all of that outside money coming in, Michael Gore figures his food service division should be able to at least break even. The problem is, a lot of the kids don't like the food, so they bring their own, and that costs the district federal dollars. As a result, the budget line for food services has had a negative sign in front of it for a few years now.
So as such, one of the discussions that we have had internally is that are there other options we should explore?
That other option is what they're calling a co-management contract with a private food service company. BPS is entertaining proposals from anyone who thinks they can come in and run the whole district-wide system while guaranteeing to wipe out the deficit.
They're abandoning the progress they've made, throwing up their hands in the air and saying, well, we can't do this. Let's call in the multinational corporations.
Boston City Council President Mike Ross does not like this idea.
Now, who are the multinational corporations? Well, one of them is Sodexo. The other one is Chartwell. The other one is Aramark.
I've worked for Sodexo before, and I've been in the businesses. And it's all about food cost. It's all about bottom line and money.
Back at the Umana Barnes School, Chef Conrad worries that if one of those companies comes into the picture, it could derail his quest to bring healthy, fresh cooking to East Boston.
I don't know if they would be as aggressive as pursuing the cutting edge of fresh fruits and vegetables and making sure the whole grains and the brown rice and what we're trying to push forward, like Jamie Oliver.
And now, a brand new sneak peek from the series premiere of Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution.
If you didn't already know, Oliver is a British celebrity chef who's got a new TV show that Councillor Ross, among others, has been watching.
Jamie Oliver went to the most, I guess, the most obese city in America, somewhere in West Virginia.
And he went into the schools to scold the lunch ladies for the food they were serving.
It's that kind of food that's killing America.
You don't have processed food in England?
God, yes. And it's killing England, too.
So, you know, I watched these things, and I was really impressed with what he's doing. And it, again, made me say, we're out of our minds here. So Chuck Turner and I sat down with Michael Gore, sat down with the superintendent, sat down with the chair of the school committee. And the response we mostly got is, we got a lot of problems, and they do. We have a deficit to make up, and they do.
Indeed, the schools are going into an even tougher budget year than the one they're stumbling through right now. Teacher layoffs and school closures are all but certain. Michael Gore says his top priority is to free up those food service deficit dollars for academic use.
That $3.5 million we can spend on students in the classrooms are used by food service departments, so we want to make sure that we run this particular enterprise correctly where they don't have to lose money.
Your critics, and I've talked to some of them, including the city council president, say that your department is mismanaged, that you haven't centralized purchasing in a way that is efficient, and there are also more partnerships that can be struck with outside people like Project Bread, who have brought in the Chefs in Schools program. Are you open to the idea that you could find these savings internally?
I think that clearly we do recognize that there are some challenges within our own structure. However, those type of strategies require two things, time and money, which we don't have.
Gore is hoping to award a contract by the end of June so that whichever company comes in would be up and running by the start of the new school year. That said, he insists no contract will be signed unless the winning bidder can guarantee they will improve nutritional standards overall in the school system. And all the companies that have been mentioned claim to be offering more fresh, healthy foods than ever before. But Councillor Ross isn't buying it.
We save $3.4 million today if we go to Sodexo. I think we wind up costing ourselves $34 million 10 years from now when those kids who aren't healthy, are overweight, are obese, are adults now, have diabetes, and cost our society even that much more.
That report from Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea. He's back with me in the studio. Adam, quick question to you. Why isn't it that this contract couldn't go to a locally owned company that could grow sustainable, locally sourced food?
It's a very good question. And in fact, there's nothing in the request for proposals, or the RFP is what they call it, that explicitly rules that out. But there are a number of reasons why some of the people involved here tell me that this thing is a lock for one of the multinationals. Firstly, BPS is asking for the bidder to wipe out their food deficit. And if the bidder can't do that through efficiencies, they would be expected to simply cut a check for the remaining amount. And I'll remind you, it's a $3.5 million deficit right now. So a small local company like City Fresh Foods in Dorchester probably couldn't swing that. That said, a consortium of small companies could come together to bid jointly, but that leads to the second barrier, which is the timetable. This is a 30-day RPF. The bidders conference was just a couple of weeks ago, and the due date is June 7th. So it's difficult to imagine that anyone other than a big multinational that's done this a million times could put together a winning proposal together that quickly. So this is why some of the people observing this process say it really was rigged for a certain result.
Okay, we've got a lot of callers who want to join us. Andrea is calling from Maynard. Welcome to Radio Boston, Andrea.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment that my kids' nutrition is at the top of my list of important things, and I think it would be a real tragedy if there's a huge multinational that takes over the meals at schools in Boston. I think it would mean immediately that there would be access to mass-produced foods full of hormones, bad for the environment, transported across thousands of miles. So it has so many setbacks. Talk about the nutrition of our kids.
Mm-hmm.
I really think this is a tragedy for children.
Andrea, thank you so much for your call. Let's get another view from Arlington. Will's on the line. Welcome to Radio Boston, Will.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I was calling. I'm all for having any company that can get the nutritional values up in the cafeteria. I think is a fantastic idea. So I heard you guys say that was one of the criteria, that you wanted them to increase nutritional value. To provide a lunch for an hour and a half a day that's going to feed 1,000 people is a tall order. So to anybody who can do it, I say fantastic, go for it.
And Will, you've got some experience as a teacher in Arlington schools?
Yep, I'm a teacher in the Arlington Public Schools. So I see the lunch at the high school. I see what they have to offer, and they're working hard to get it out there. But just to provide a lunch for, it's 1,000 students in the high school, and they have to keep it open for an hour and a half. So what good-tasting, nutritional food can you provide for that hour and a half?
All right, Will, thanks so much for your call. Adam, obviously people obviously care a lot about food in the schools. So just one more quick question to you. For people who are opposed to the privatization of Boston school lunches, do they see any way to stop this, or is this contract with Sodexo seemingly a fait accompli?
Well, the city council could always vote down the BPS budget. And I asked Mike Ross, the city council president, if he would vote to do that, and he just said he's not ready to go there yet. But he is publicly urging Court Street to take this plan back to the drawing board.
All right. Well, Radio Boston's Adam Ragusa, first of all, thank you so much for bringing this story to light, and we'll expect you to be on top of it in the future.
My pleasure, and I will.
All right. We'll have to take a quick break now, but when we come back, Massachusetts takes on the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. And a little later...
We all know that Columbus sailed across the Atlantic in 1492, but it wasn't until the 1620s that the English established substantial, secure colonies.
But who were those pilgrims before they ventured to the New World, and who were the ones that survived that challenge? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. All that and more when we come back on Radio Boston.